Have you noticed a change in the climate? With superstorms and other extreme weather becoming more common, it's impossible to deny that things are changing fast. But even though we've known about the problem for decades, public policy and private behavior have failed to respond at scale. Here to lay out a potential path forward is Dana Fisher, author of the new book, Saving Ourselves, From Climate Shocks to Climate Action. Dana is a professor at the School of International Service and director of the Center for Environment, Community, and Equity at American University. Here she is with five big ideas from the book.
Hi, I'm Dana Fisher, a professor at the School of International Service and director of the Center for Environment, Community, and Equity at American University. I'm also the author of Saving Ourselves, From Climate Shocks to Climate Action. I wrote this book after studying climate policymaking and observing the worsening climate crisis for the past 25 years. The new book brings together ideas that I have developed over the years to understand how far we will have to go to keep our planet habitable. Saving Ourselves maps out a feasible path to the other side of the climate crisis. It explains the role that we will all need to play to save ourselves. I'm going to share with you five of the key insights from my book. Insight number one, the climate crisis is worsening, and current policies are not doing enough to stop it. The book tracks the climate regime and related climate policies since it began in 1992. It shows that we are continuing on a very dangerous pathway that includes continued expansion of fossil fuels around the world. Given the outcome of the recent round of the climate negotiations, that was COP28, which was held in Dubai and ended in December 2023, the outcome concluded with a very bland statement about phasing out fossil fuels one day in the future. It didn't include a target, it didn't include a timetable, and it didn't include any penalties for not achieving the very, very bland goals that were included in it. As a result of this resolution, it is abundantly clear that the climate crisis will continue and it will worsen. As the recently released global carbon budget documents, with our current political trajectory, which didn't change at all given this most recent round of climate negotiations, CO2 emissions from fossil fuels are continuing to grow. They're growing even while clean energy expands. As a result, we should expect more climate shocks that are more severe, come more frequently, and lead to bigger and more disruptive climate activism. In the book, I define climate shocks as deviations from normal environmental patterns in the form of droughts, floods, heat waves, or other extreme events that have been exacerbated by climate change. While we scramble to agree to and implement policies that all interests and all actors support, carbon concentrations in the atmosphere are continuing to rise, and the effects of climate change continues to be felt around the world as climate shocks that have increasing intensity and growing frequency. Insight number two. As climate shocks become more frequent and more severe, they will inevitably lead to more social conflict as areas become uninhabitable, resources become more scarce, and climate migration becomes much more common. All of these are well documented to lead to social tensions and social conflict. As our world warms, there is no question that we'll experience all of these simultaneously. History tells us that what we call the precautionary principle, which is this idea that we should change our behaviors out of an abundance of caution, and that would be an abundance of caution because climate change could lead to very severe effects on society. History tells us that this principle will lose out when it goes head-to-head against entrenched fossil fuel interests that have benefited from privileged access to power and capital for so long. At this point, climate change is no longer a possibility to be avoided through the precautionary principle. Instead, it is an inevitability that we will all need to work together to curtail. Saving Ourselves discusses how it is the universal experience of personal risk that motivates social change and opens up opportunities to limit the climate crisis. As climate shocks and their effects grow, they will motivate what I call an anthroshift. An anthroshift occurs when a perceived risk reaches a critical threshold and leads people to alter their behaviors, compelling social entities to respond and mitigate the risk. To reach this tipping point, things are going to have to get a lot worse. As the climate crisis continues to worsen, lives will be lost. Anthro shifts are empowered by what I call a risk pivot. That is, a heightened and generalized sense of risk that can motivate social change. We saw this process in person at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, when much of the world shut down with the aim of limiting transmission of the coronavirus. Anthro shifts open up windows of opportunity for innovative social change. However, social responses to the pandemic showed us how only a massive shock that is both severe and durable and lasts over a long period of time can open up the window of opportunity wide enough that we can achieve the systemic changes that are needed to address the climate crisis sufficiently. Otherwise, we will see incremental change that is insufficient to limit the suffering that scientists have been reporting is right around the corner. It is time to take steps to prepare our families, our communities, and our businesses for what is coming, and hopefully to avoid as much human suffering as possible. Insight number 3. Since policymakers are continuing to spin their wheels and businesses are acting in a bipolar fashion, with some pushing for a transition to clean energy, while others dig in their heels and continue to invest in fossil fuel expansion with the hope that they can get a little more extraction done before it's too late, civil society and social movements are the social actor most likely to push for the level of anthro shift that is needed. However, so far, the climate movement has not yet mobilized the masses to help us save ourselves. To date, in fact, only a small proportion of society is engaged in the climate movement. But the movement is growing and it is evolving. As our world warms and more people personally experience the climate crisis, they will join the activists in the streets demanding change. There's a ton of research that documents the natural progression of a social movement. It shows how social movements either fizzle out or become increasingly confrontational the longer the activism goes without achieving its goals. Given how the climate crisis is worsening, the climate movement will not fizzle out. Instead, activists will grow more confrontational as the climate crisis worsens and the political system does not respond at the level needed. Confrontational actions that become more common is evidence of what we in the social sciences call a radical flank. A radical flank is a faction of a movement that spins off and chooses to employ more confrontational tactics to achieve its goals. Some recent and notable examples of confrontational climate activism include throwing soup or food or even paint, disrupting events like we saw at the Met Opera in New York City in December, slow marching, that's walking really slowly to slow down traffic or even blocking traffic, bird dogging elected officials, and blocking buildings. In some cases, we've even seen people using crazy glue in all sorts of ways. Radical flanks of social movements tend to be unpopular, but they also tend to increase support for more moderate flanks of a social movement. And overall, the outcome is that the social movement generally expands. Insight number 4. So far, the climate movement is a far cry from the radical flanks of past social movements. These social movements are documented to have blown up buildings, to blown up car dealerships, to slashing works of art, to harming people, and much, much more. In Saving Ourselves, I document how the radical flank of the climate movement is growing and is not a monolith. Instead, it currently includes what I call shockers, those activists who use civil disobedience to draw the media and the public's attention to the climate crisis, and disruptors, those activists who integrate civil disobedience into their broader campaigns. Historically, the radicalization of social movement tactics has led to the emergence of counter-movements, as well as to law enforcement getting more repressive. This cycle of increasingly confrontational activism that leads to repression is likely to lead to violence that targets activists. When activists are targeted, it will only draw more attention and encourage more people to join the movement. Insight number 5. It's bad. It's getting worse, and nothing we have done so far comes anywhere close to what is needed. There is reason to believe that both large numbers of activists and disruptive protests will be necessary components of the climate movement before they lead to outcomes that respond sufficiently to the climate crisis. This is especially true given the oversized role that entrenched fossil fuel interests have played historically and are continuing to play today. Just look at the outcome of the recent round of the climate negotiations for evidence. The book ends by providing three takeaways about how we are going to save ourselves and what will lead to the level of mobilization needed to motivate the type of systemic changes that will limit climate change. First, we need to create community and real solidarity among activists and social movements. Activism that is embedded in community and has real grassroots is most likely to be successful. I have written about this in terms of the ways that activists and movements connect to one another through intersectionality and other common interests and identities over the years. These are the cases where we see the most successful social movements. Second, we need to capitalize on moral shocks, and that includes violence. In the book, I talk about how we should expect that as the movement grows, so too will the violence against activists. I suggest we learn from the lessons of the civil rights movement, which took advantage of the violence against those engaging in nonviolent civil disobedience to mobilize sympathizers to the cause of racial justice and equity. More recently, in summer 2020, we saw how peaceful protesters getting tear gassed by law enforcement in Washington, D.C., motivated many people, including senators, to take to the streets in solidarity. Third, we must cultivate resilience. As climate shocks become more severe, we must prepare both our environments but also our communities, so that they can weather these extremes when they come. There are some hopeful first steps in cultivating resilience that we can see in the U.S. government's new American Climate Corps, which will support young people as they train to work for both climate mitigation and climate adaptation in local communities, but much more work is needed to create and cultivate and expand resilience within our communities and among them. Saving ourselves stresses that it will take everyone doing all types of activism, including shockers and disruptors, as well as everyday people working within their communities to create social and environmental resilience while supporting a clean energy transition that will get us to the other side of the climate crisis. Thank you for listening, and check out Saving Ourselves Yourself.
Thank you, Dana. That was Dana Fisher with five big ideas from Saving Ourselves, From Climate Shocks to Climate Action. You might also like our book bite for How to Prepare for Climate Change, A Practical Guide to Surviving the Chaos by David Pogue. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.